Fuse Box. It's that time of year, bro. Can you smell it? This is Fuse Box number 271, Executive Odor, boys and ghouls, and you can smell that smell.
Indeed I can, Mr. Keynes, and that smell is clearly the rank and odoriferous stink of an impotent tin pot dictator wannabe in bloom.
I love the smell of deportation in the morning. It smells like... No. What is that smell? It's definitely not victory. And... Oh, the burning! Ow, my sphincter! Ow.
Uh-oh. Doesn't hate and fear cause anal itch and burning?
Well, I'm pretty sure racism and ignorance do. Bigotry certainly doesn't help.
Yikes. This is gonna be bad.
The smell, the burning, my sphincter, my huge, beautiful sphincter. Bathroom. Where's the bathroom? My gold-plated toilet. I have to get...
Whoa, bro. That right there. Now that is a bigly huge case of Montezuma's revenge.
Just a little retribution from our friends down Mexico way. Perhaps?
Yeah, I don't think ice can fix that. But maybe a bag of ice would help.
Maybe some brown shirt maggots could just throw a swastika emblazoned tarp over it and call it good.
Yeah, just make sure it's downwind, bro. If you know what I mean.
Why, yes. Hello there, friends, and welcome in to...
Hey, you know who's hot?
Huh? Wait. Are we doing that again, that thing that we did before? Are we...
Gregory Peck.
The same but different. Gregory Peck. Yes, absolutely. Very hot, yeah.
Gregory Peck was a stud, bro.
Let's see. Tony Curtis?
No, too pretty. No, Gregory Peck.
That's the list? Gregory Peck.
Yeah, that's the list.
Well, that was fun. Alrighty then, friends, this is Fusebox 271, curiously and hauntingly titled Executive Odor. And someone better open a window for this one. I'm your freeze-dried to preserve freshness host, Mark Rose, and over there, awaiting his marching orders from General Foods, the commissar of compression, the sweet-smelling Milt Keynes, everybody.
Well, just a dab of vanilla and Jack Daniels behind the ears after my vodka bubble bath is the secret. So, let me ask you, why the feckin' huck hasn't someone just come out and told that fat orange fuck to suck balls?
Well, I think more are endeavoring to do exactly that through the courts, but you know how justice moves.
Yeah. Slower than a line at the damn DMV.
Indeed. And they seem to be playing whack-a-maggot again, friends. Every time we get something smacked down by our courts, Dumpy Trump immediately tries another gargantuan overreach of authority. It's maddening.
Yeah, look, executive orders have been used by every president over the years.
Of course.
But this is the first damn time one of them has attempted to use their authority to levy tariffs, put the military in the streets under the guise of immigration enforcement, and just do about any damn thing he wants because he thinks he can.
And he said as much. He stated publicly that he doesn't care at all about unifying the country.
Yeah. You know, especially after that fellow Nazi of his, Charlie Kirk, got whacked.
Yes, and as tragic as that was, depending on your personal view, Kirk's ideas of ushering in a totally white world, yeah, that's just totally against the grain, to say the least. This is not who we are.
It goes against the goddamn laws of this country. Or did at one time, because the Republican Party clearly wants to set us back by about 100 years.
And it's the responsibility of every clear-thinking, enlightened person in this country, and frankly across the planet, actually, to make sure democracy is the law of the land. Period. And by the way, I just want to mention something that happened a few short days ago, and that, of course, was the canceling of Jimmy Kimmel for remarks he made regarding the Charlie Kirk incident. Now, if you'll go back and listen to that, his remarks were in no way out of bounds, and you can go see that for yourselves at the link we've provided for you in the show description.
No, man, he was on the list. The grifter-in-chief had plastered a target on Kimmel's back and was waiting for an excuse for moral outrage, and this was it.
True. True. But what I want to do here is shout out to a chap named Christopher Armitage of The Existential Republic, who wrote a great piece on this development and suggested a few positive things we can all do if you are so inclined. For instance, number one, cancel Disney Plus and tell them why. Two, call, email, or mail those companies to complain. 3, screenshot and tag advertisers asking why they support censorship. And 4, share this playbook with others.
Yeah, that sounds like a good list to me.
Indeed, because if we don't stand up for things like this now,
we'll definitely be bending over later.
Exactly. And to go along with this positive action, and as we aspire to do on each show, we've got good news to balance out the insanity that seems to rise above the more sensible and positive news stories out there worldwide. And since this is the beginning of the ghoulish season once again, I know. The All Hallows Eve season isn't your most favoritist time of year, Mr. Gaines.
Dude, in all honesty, I don't mind Halloween, really, at all. I mean, I've definitely worn my share of weird costumes and have gone to some questionable parties and have done questionable things. Joyce DeWitt threw some epic Halloween parties, bro. It's just that sometimes I'd like to find a population of folks who don't live and breathe it 24/7, 365.
Wait. Joyce DeWitt? From Three's Company?
Oh, yeah. Oh, bro. Yeah. Epic parties. That sexy little gal was a freak, for sure. You know, I should call her.
Who knew? But yes, I can appreciate your position. However, I actually do like this time of year, but for different reasons. The season change and the creepy, crawly things that come out of the grave to say hi.
Hi.
You mean Congress, right?
Well, some of them have clearly zombified. They just don't know it. But in the spirit of all that, and so we can have an excuse to replay them, stay tuned, friends, for a few personal favorite spoken word pieces that fits nicely into the season. We also have another installment of the Grindhouse Minute from our freaky and fun friend, 42nd Street Pete, who will share his review of a film that even made old Pete himself run screaming for the exit. 1977's Fight for Your Life. Most nearly all of this and so much less when, or if, we return.
Unless we don't. In which case, we did. Or could they?
What possible satisfaction or glory could we find?
You know, it's no secret, I'm a big fan of the Grindhouse period of cinematic history, and nothing covers these times and events better than Grindhouse Resurrection magazine. For one thing, the folks who write for it have first-hand experience with what they're writing about. They were actually there, maybe even created some of the films we're talking about. Like in issue number 2, a rather scathing and wonderfully insightful article on the BS on Blu-ray. Not everything on that format should be. And in an article by Richard Tater, he outlines a few of the direct-to-video films that probably didn't warrant the restoration, or for that matter, the hefty price tag. I'd call that a public service. So will you. Pick up a copy of Grindhouse Resurrection magazine. Info on ordering your copy is in the show description. I promise you, you won't be disappointed. We asked this giant cephalopod which brand of peanut butter it prefers. This nationally recognized brand or new creamy Jits?
TheFuseBoxShow.com.
Welcome back to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside.
Oh, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, Carnival 9. Nice pull, bro.
I don't know, it seems appropriate, doesn't it? From the year 1973, the truly epic tune featured on Brain Salad Surgery. And I am proud to say, Mr. Keynes, I actually saw that tour.
Really?
Yes, sir.
We might have been there together and didn't know.
Yeah? Huh. Yeah. I vividly remember wondering if that huge tower of modular synths that Emerson was using during that tour was going to come crashing down on him during the show. It was a precarious balancing act, to say the very least.
Coincidentally, Joyce DeWitt's doorbell played that song opening at her Halloween parties. I really should call her.
Well, while you're over there reminiscing and drooling...
Hello. I'm here to bring you the good news.
You know, in spite of the absolutely whack-bat crazy stance of our psycho head of health and human services, Robert Kennedy Jr., there actually are remarkable breakthroughs being made in all forms of treatments. For instance, a big win for public health access, the World Health Organization has added 39 medicines to its global essential list, including breakthrough treatments for lung cancer, melanoma, multiple myeloma, and type 2 diabetes. Being on that list means countries are more likely to buy the medicine in bulk. Copycat versions get made faster, and prices come down quicker. Several of the drugs are already WHO pre-qualified, allowing countries to begin large-scale purchasing immediately.
Well, hell, man, we can't have that. But I'm sure old Bobby Jr. will gum up the works by throwing some damn bricks of heroin into it.
Yeah, after he's done snacking on them for breakfast, I'm sure. And now, let's wet our snorkels, friends. California's underwater forests are bouncing back thanks to divers with hammers. Once devastated by warming waters, pollution, and an explosion of ravenous purple sea urchins, California's kelp forests are now regrowing at scale. The turnaround is thanks to an ambitious restoration effort led by the Bay Foundation. Over the last 13 years, divers have spent over 15,000 hours underwater, manually smashing 5.8 million urchins to clear space for kelp to return. This underwater pothole filling has restored acres of coastal seabed, which once again provides food and shelter for a vast array of marine wildlife.
Perchance pissing off a plethora of purple urchins, perhaps?
Possibly, if not probably.
I wonder if they have a union.
Friends, this is the creepy crawly season. And over the years, we...
Hey, the nearly 12 years.
Yes, indeed. Our 12th year beginning in January, friends. Well, over those years, we've had the pleasure of working with a bunch of very talented writers and actors who oftentimes bring life to their own written works in a segment we called Twisted Epiphanies. To start things off, here's one from way back in the antediluvian days of 2014, penned by our own comrade in audio and visual crime, Jeff Pollard, narrated by Jeff as well, called John the Heathen.
Extending oily greeting.
Meet John the Heathen.
Expression of no feeling,
but dank, twisted meaning. Fingertips teasing.
Cold blood, rage seething. Blade thrust for no reason.
Proving life, thus fleeting.
Inflicted mental treason.
Black memories receding.
Murky surf revealing.
Mutilated bones bleaching.
He sends the brain reeling.
This John, the Heathen.
Now that'll get the hairs on the back of your neck standing straight the hell up.
Yes. Yes, it will. We'll have a couple more of those pieces to sprinkle in, but first, a visit from our favorite grindhouse ghoul, 42nd Street Pete himself, here with a review of a classic sleaze fest from 1977, Fight for Your Life.
You got more guts than your old man.
I'm not afraid of you, Kane. You want to hang me, you go right ahead.
Give me a sticker for that pink pig.
It's only the beginning. Now it's our turn.
Kane, that ain't no way to thank Aunt Jemima for all that hospitality my daughter sends every guy.
Fight for your life. A gut-punching flick. Join the thousands who have stood up to cheer the brother who taught America the meaning of the word courage. Fight for your life.
Rated R, the theater near you.
And now it's time for another Grindhouse Minute with 42nd Street Pete.
Oh,
Okay, did you ever see a film that made you want to crawl out of the theater and crawl out of the theater fast? Well, how about 1977's Fight for Your Life, starring William Sanderson, who obviously left this off his resume. This was a William Mishkin film, you know, produced by William Mishkin. It starts over in Manhattan with guys escaping from prison, William Sanderson, but then he has these other two guys, a Spanish guy and a Chinese guy who he introduces to people as, you know, my spick and my chink or whatever. And the N-word is liberally dropped in here because once they get out of Manhattan, they drive up to Morristown, New Jersey, and do a home invasion of this black reverend and his family, and it gets really grim. Now, I didn't see it under Fight for Your Life. I saw it under Staying Alive, which was basically suck me in not knowing what I was getting into. So like I said, this just kept getting worse and worse. A kid gets killed. The Chinese bad guy gets killed by getting thrown through a window and has a huge sheet of glass sticking out of him. The whole thing is there's a detective following them. And, you know, the Sanderson character basically humiliates the whole family. And he goes, dance us a jig, stuff like that. And like I said, every other word, we're dropping the N-bomb here. So it wasn't too cool. But at the end, the detective shows up and the minister at this point beating the shit out of the Sanderson character. And the minister throws him a gun and he shoots Sanderson in the throat. All of a sudden, I'm aware that I'm the only white guy in this theater and I'm out the side exit because people were really riled the fuck up. Actually, somebody gave films like this a name. They called them the race hate films because they would stir shit up. And this certainly did. So, you know, I was out the door and pretty quick. That's our Grindhouse Minute for today.
This has been another Grindhouse Minute with 42nd Street Pete.
Now, that's funny how this one isn't on William Sanderson's resume.
Well, you know what? It actually is on his wiki page.
Oh, wow.
They also mentioned that this film was and is banned in the UK. But you know, he was just a year or two away from 1982's Blade Runner and a very successful run on The Newhart Show as Larry, among many, many other memorable roles. And speaking of voodoo dolls, even though we weren't.
Voodoo Chap. I have a dapper little British voodoo doll with bowler and umbrella. I like to take the pins out of his head and stick them in his butt to wake him up. And sometimes when I really want to frighten him, I take off all his clothes so no one can tell what class he's from.
And that little morsel was written by poet, actor, and writer Lawrence Overmeyer and voiced once again by our buddy, Jeff Pollard.
You know, for a minute there, really wasn't sure where this one was going.
And I think that was kind of the fun of it, Mr. Keynes. We know not where.
Until we do, unless we can't.
Or didn't. And I want to close out our Halloweeny festivities, friends, with another one of my personal favorites, a piece once again written and narrated by Jody Lorimer. And this one is a real pip. So let's all enjoy a lovely visit with Grandmother.
She sat quietly, stroking the long, stiff hairs on her legs. It soothed her, this petting, while she waited for the animal. It wouldn't be long now. From here, she could see the flickerings of goings-on below. Faint sounds, a flash of movement, the buzzing of familiar voices, rising and falling in an ancient cadence. And then, the sound of the new ones, drifting up and over like the frothy, sparkling foam of bubbles riding over deep, churning water. They don't know our ways. How could they? They were delicate with a language that chirped and sang. They were restless and flitted from here to there as if constantly afraid of being caught. They had flitted here, to her ancient home, probably to avoid being caught by something, but she couldn't understand what. The new ones gestured and waved and twittered and fluttered, but it made no sense to her. At first, they thought the new ones were beautiful in a translucent sort of way, filmy and light. Soon enough, they began to seem breakable. Dry twigs and weightless leaves carried by the breeze on a whim. She didn't like them, and it seemed they didn't like her, or the rest of her tribe. She thought they might be afraid because they judged them. They didn't know their ways. How could they? The time had come around to collect a new living place above the old, and continue. They had all felt the light ancestors above resonate with the deep ground lines, drawing them, as it always did, to this place at this time. There could be no thought of not being here. It was ever so. It was simply the order of things. Yet after we had collected, and when we began to dig, to uncover the old living places, to bring the grandmothers up from the den of deep energy, as they must, to inhabit the new living place and radiate to the living, the new ones suddenly flew to a far corner and twittered nervously, waving their arms and fluttering. They were afraid of our slow and ancient ways, emerging from the sonic world, ways tied to the subterranean from the beginning, dwelling in darkness to absorb the deep rhythms that throbbed in us. We emerge when we must, as now. We are not at home in the bright air as they are. They don't understand our ways. How could they? Fragile little flittery things. A rumbling began within her. The animal, she could feel it. She had lived two other lives in two other forms, and this would be her third form. And her third life, she would be a grandmother. At last, she arched forward, bending almost in half. Her breath shuddered, ripples quaked to her furthest extremities. She heaved very slowly, once, twice, and her back split open to reveal the soft, silvery carapace unfolding that, once revealed, would harden and endure. Then she would return to the new living place, a new, pregnant, and hungry creature.
Now, would I be wrong to assume that Lorimer's done some serious chemicals back in the day?
Something you can relate to?
Maybe. Okay, yeah. But you know, only 3 or 47 times. Usually at Joyce DeWitt's Halloween parties, man. Oh. Yeah. I really should call her.
Be that as it won't. Grandmother is another fantastic piece and so much fun to produce, let me tell ya. You know, our contributors are all just so incredibly talented, truly, and for reals. And with that skittering sound, let us call it a show, Boys and Ghouls. But not before thanking our delightfully creepy contributors, 42nd Street Pete, Jody Lorimer, Lawrence Overmeyer, and Jeff Pollard. Thanks as well to the omnidimensional man of mystery himself, Mr. Milt Gaines, for technical assistance, questionable oversharing, and so much more.
Just doing what I can with what I got, bro. Folks, you should ought to know, we got us this little extra spiffy Patreon thing going on that you need to be part of. Patreon.com/TheFuseBoxShow will get you there.
Sign up and receive early show releases, exclusive content, free swag, and that warm and fuzzy internal glow you get from knowing you're contributing to the care and feeding of our humble little show.
Yeah, but you know what? Don't stop there. Get cool Fusebox gear at the Fusebox store from our website at thefuseboxshow.com. Up there in the swag section of the menu. Shop, buy, repeat.
And slimy supernatural protoplasmic thanks, as always, to the fine and fabutastic folks at Grindhouse Resurrection Magazine for their continued support. Find out more about what makes them tick at 42ndStreetPete.net. Lastly and finally, but certainly at the end, thanks to you, friends, for pushing play on this 271st edition of the show, because we do so truly appreciate your valuable ear time. I have been your right side up in an upside down sort of way host, Mark Rose, saying, until our next cartoon.
Fuse Box.